This podcast episode of The Kick Around is brought to you by Soccer 90. Now, Soccer90.com is your source for gear from soccer clubs all over the world. For example, are you looking by chance for a Ronaldo number 7 Manchester United shirt for yourself or a loved one? Well, they could probably help out with that. A Messi PSG shirt? Yep, that too. Chelsea, Liverpool, Chivas, clubs from all over the world, even national team gear. And while you can shop online, don't forget if you're up in Frisco to go check out the actual physical brick and mortar store at Toyota Stadium next door to the Hall of Fame right there on Main Street. You gotta walk in. It's kind of an amusement park of soccer awesomeness, and it's a great place for gift ideas for the soccer-loving P1 in your life. And when you check out at soccer90.com online with all your stuff, you're going to get 25% off if you just use the discount code KICKAROUND when you check out. Soccer90.com.
And Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket.
It's time for The Kick Around, The Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is The Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, two guys who always have their transfer windows open, Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
There's Pogba. Greenwood. Greenwood had a pop. Woodman's filled it. And guess who's there? Close your eyes. And he never went away. Without so much as a by your leave, Cristiano Ronaldo has stolen back the show.
Hi-de-ho, P1s, and welcome to The Kick Around. Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sport Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket, where you, the good, sweet, clean P1, sits around, talks soccer and all that implies. And you can now find us also at our website, thekickaround.com. For those new here or unfamiliar, hi, my name is Peter. Good to speak with you. And joining me by my side is my soccer-talking BFF, and word on the street is he's strongly considering opening a Caucho de Pepe pop-up shop. Most interesting man in the world, Andy Swift.
What a dream that would be.
Soccer!
So, man, the glow about you, Peter.
Do
the,
I have
the
a
pep in your step?
Do I have a post-coital glow?
You have a my team is going to win the
Everything.
Premier League title glow about you today.
Well, it's understandable, isn't it? Did you hear the raucous Old Trafford faithful?
I did. I you know, Sam, I heard the goal he selected for the goal open.
To be fair to Sam, I told him.
Yeah, because I was expecting a different goal because of his tweeting earlier this week and another momentous goal in DFW history, but apparently things changed and, you know. When the top dog in the soccer world scores a goal, I guess you have to play that goal because he doesn't score enough, right? So let's just play another one of his goals.
Well, there's other extenuating circumstances like length and sound quality. It's a busy thing picking the goal call, Andy.
It is.
Right, now put a pin in Ronaldo talk for just a minute. Let's preview what's coming up today because, Andy, as you're well aware, based on all the conversations we've had this morning, there is too much soccer to talk about. We will get into all of the day's events. We will get into the U.S. men's national team drama that took place since we talked to you last time.
Drama.
Including the rise of one young Ricardo Pepi. Tyler Kern will join us to talk a little Bundesliga. And Daniel Robertson will join us to talk a little Serie A as well. And he'll probably maybe even have some insight on the Weston McKennie story, potentially, maybe.
Qualifier talk as well.
Qualifier talk.
Where do we fit all this?
I don't know. You know, Champions the funny League thing start? Is, when we left everybody last, you and I were on the eve of going on a road trip together to Austin for the Dallas-Austin thing.
That's so bottom of the barrel right now.
And we have never been able to tell the story about what happened on that crazy trip.
And there is a story.
Oh my God, is there ever a story? Somehow we'll figure out how to do all of that. Oh, and then there was the crazy stuff going on in Brazil with Argentina and the COVID thing. So much to do. But because it is the headline story that is ringing around the soccer globe, Ronaldo makes his return to Old Trafford 12 years. If you really sit and think about how long it's been since he last played for Manchester United, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer subbed out in his first game. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
And there are they were talking today that there are kids in attendance as 12 years old, as 10, 11, 12 years old, who never got to see him play for United in the first place. That's how long ago he was playing. And you would think normally a guy that shows up who's 36, 37 would be kind of like flabby or not in great shape. But tell me he doesn't look like he's a 24-year-old dude.
He plays like it.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, I don't know what you can say about the guy, right? And today, like, I have so many questions for
Pending sexual assault allegations?
Yeah. I have... That included. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just he's an ongoing story, right? And as a Man United fan, the supporter that you are, I have so many questions for you. Like, heading into the game and you hear that he's going to start, what was your expectation? Did you expect him to take a few games to kind of get into the swing of things with his teammates, or did you expect instant results?
It doesn't surprise me he scored today, but it also wouldn't have surprised me if everything looked super wonky, because on top of adding a new element into a mix of players, you're also dealing with the cliche of it being the first game back from an international break.
Right.
And this is even more accelerated.
Where he scored a brace the last
game. Yes. Yes. But I just mean, you know, we talk about this all the time. The games that always happen with big clubs with lots of international players who've been called up generally are pretty flat. And I think we saw a little bit of that today.
Yeah, we did. In other games.
But it's even accelerated by the fact that some of these guys played more than two games over the course of 6 days.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really know what to expect today. And, you know, based on the first 44 minutes of the game, it was a lot of, okay, it's going to be this, which is United is really, really good at a lot of things except that last 20 yards of space.
Yeah, but I will say this, though. You could see from Ronaldo what was about to come, whether it was going to be this game or in future games. He was just missing connecting. He, you know, little mistrap here, little mispass there. He was so close, and it just took him 45 minutes, less than that, 43 minutes.
Yeah. So here's the thing. And everybody's super, I mean, if you're a United fan, I haven't seen the fan base this excited and this hopeful and gleeful and literally it almost feels like a decade, okay? But let's remember, all due respect, it was Newcastle at Old Trafford, and I would forewarn anybody super excited that if you go back and think of the very few opportunities, including the goal that they scored, where Newcastle was dangerous and had opportunities, I believe those are opportunities good top half teams will take advantage of against United, because there are still problems within this team related to having to play Pogba deeper, not having a proper person to play alongside Pogba, and the fact that I think the back line is still figuring themselves out because they've got some new pieces in there too.
Yeah, Pogba was very deep today, and Matic was okay. He was an okay player. You know, I mean, he wasn't bad, but...
He's just too slow.
Yeah, it's not the six that you want, right, out of those two.
You almost wish you could marry Fred's physicality and his athleticism in Matic's brain. Because I think Matic is a good passer and he knows where to go. Yeah. He just doesn't have the physical ability to do it anymore.
Right, yeah. And Fred was, I think he was on the bench. He could have played, but they didn't know until last minute if he was going to be able to play or not. But I think at the end of the day, independent of the issues that you think the team has at the sixth position, which I think will be resolved, it's a long season, there's no doubt Ronaldo makes this team better.
I think so. I think you just have to wait and see what happens when they play a better side.
Yeah,
they play
but
they play West Ham next week. Now, they play West Ham without Antonio, who got two yellow cards today. But I...
Okay, then I have a question for you. Okay. They play Newcastle today. Ronaldo's not in. Who would have started? Martial?
No, they probably would have started. They probably would have started Greenwood up top.
Okay,
he's really
but
the
then who goes on the side? Lingard?
They could have put Lingard on one side, Sancho on the other. They could.
Is it 4-1?
I don't know. See, this because minus Ronaldo, the problem this team has is breaking down low bunker defense type teams.
Right.
They beat Leeds because Leeds doesn't do that. They struggled against those two other teams because they did that very well.
And today,
And Newcastle was okay at it.
Right. But with Ronaldo,
it's different.
It's different.
Yeah, because that second goal after Newcastle mm-hmm. ties it, it took United 5 passes to get the ball to Ronaldo, who makes a run down the channel mm-hmm. and finishes with the left foot. Now, again, that third choice keeper for Newcastle is pretty weak. Right. And he got nutmegged on.
Yeah.
But
and the first
Ronaldo
goal
hit it
was,
pretty hard.
Yeah. Right. Yes. He hit the ball hard. Right.
Hit the ball real hard.
He struck it well. But that's Ronaldo. He is perfect. His form, we don't have to talk about it. Everybody knows this. But his technique is just, every play, his technique is like almost perfect.
Yeah.
The technique, just technique.
He seems genuinely excited to be back. He clearly adores and just soaks up like a sponge all the love and adoration that he's getting.
Big smile when he scored that first goal. He knew the moment.
It rings all of the bells and does all of the things. And I realize there's a whole subset of people listening that are like, yeah, but what about all of the bad things that we think are true about Ronaldo? And I get it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But I don't know what to do with that at this point. I want to lay a marker here for the rest of this season. I truly believe in my heart the dark horse thing that is going to come up and really play a big part in Manchester United's season is Jesse Lingard. Just keep measure of that. By the way, who scored for England.
Great. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Had a fantastic goal today.
Yeah, today's
but came
goal
off the
was,
bench.
Yeah, awesome.
But on a team that has Greenwood and Sancho and Cavani.
It's funny because I have a note here that says Sancho, Greenwood, Rashford, Lingard, Martial, Cavani battling for a few spots. Somebody has to go. And to me, Lingard getting loaned again, I mean, right?
I think he's going to stay, and I think he's going to play a big part in the season.
You do?
I do think so. Yeah.
All right.
Unless West Ham comes to them and makes some sort of ridiculous swap with Declan Rice in the winter window, which is never going
to
happen.
Yeah.
I think he's here for the rest of the season. And
so then who loses out? Martial, I guess.
Martial.
Yeah,
I mean,
and Cavani, too. Cavani probably is on his way out.
Probably.
Yep.
Yeah, I think those are... Yeah, they got rid of James, who, by the way, ended up in the place he should have been, ironically, all along, which is Leeds.
Yeah.
Which is great for him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and we'll talk a little bit about that later. So Ronaldo scores not once, but twice on his return to Old Trafford.
And his compatriot, also.
And Bruno Fernandes had
beautiful
a fantastic strike.
Yeah.
The whole thing. It was Manchester United... Land is happy today. United 4, Newcastle 1. And by the way, based on goal score, they currently sit at the top of the Premier League table. When we come back, we'll look at the rest of the day, including Chelsea's big win over Villa, next here on the Kick Around. Welcome back to the Kick Around. Now, last time we were on, we gave away 11 Kick Around t-shirts that were all numbered 1 through 11, the traditional numbering system in our favorite sport. And you can buy your own version of those shirts without the numbers because those are very exclusive to those lucky 11P1s, who, by the way, have been sending in photos of their shirts, and they all seem to love them. They look great.
Is one free to go buy a t-shirt and then put the number on it?
I'm sure that if you asked nicely, the guys over at E6 would do that for you.
Okay.
You could probably pull that off if you wanted to. And we got staff shirts today, the staff kick-around shirts with their personal initials and stuff. Yes, yes.
Cool.
So you can go get all of that, including kick-around jerseys and the very, very frighteningly accurate Ted Lasso away and home jerseys with the proper
football is live
jersey sponsor on the front. Banter, by the way. Have you seen the new episode?
I'm all the way caught up except yesterday, the one that dropped yesterday.
There is a special guest appearance in this episode that will blow your mind.
Can't wait.
It's so great. It's so very, very good. All right, back to
action. We have to wait and watch them like skip a week because watching just 30 minutes is not enough. You feel like you need more. So we watch every other week.
Oh, so you do an hour?
Yeah. We'll watch.
How do you wait a week and make sure you don't get spoiled?
I don't think people are spoiling it.
Okay.
Yeah, people are good on Twitter.
I don't know how you can go a week without go 2 weeks without watching it. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy TV talk, Andy Swift.
You and I are very different, Peter. Thank God.
We learned that last on the road trip, didn't we, Andy? All right, let's get back into the action at hand. The other big game of the day that I actually thought really lined up to be the most fascinating of all of the 7 games in the Premier League today was Chelsea hosting Aston Villa. Now, Andy, this is where I'm going to come to you to try to help explain some of this COVID restrictions, player, because Villa was missing some players today because they weren't. I'm so confused as to what was going on with all of that.
So if a player was released to go play in a country, in a red zone country, this is UK only, not the rest of Europe. They don't have that issue. This is Premier League only. They have to quarantine for 10 days once they return to England in a hotel room. They can't even train, so they're going to miss games.
Okay.
This is why the four players that weren't given permission to go play for Argentina, two Spurs and
lied about it.
Right.
Okay.
And then went to Croatia on their return, because there you don't have to quarantine, so they could train for those 10 days. So that's the difference. You spend 10 days training as opposed to 10 days in a hotel.
So what was the difference with the decision late last night that would, in theory, for example, have allowed Fred to play for United today?
Yeah, so the players that were not let go, those players that were not given permission to leave and that didn't go, because the four that left for Argentina are going to get fined by their teams. They weren't given permission. The federations that didn't get those players, that's Brazil, Chile, Paraguay, and Mexico.
Chile.
Threatened to trigger a clause in the FIFA regulations that forces players that are not released for a FIFA window by the rules to sit for 5 days, to not be eligible to play for 5 days once that window's open, making them ineligible for this weekend. They worked it out at the last minute.
Those federations
withdrew their trigger threat.
Right.
By that time, some teams still play their players. Some teams didn't train with them, or made alternate, you know, plans with their tactics, I guess, like United.
Right.
And they didn't play them.
Interesting. All right.
But this is going to be a problem that will come up next window.
So those are two very different situations. Yeah. The former one is the one that affected Villa today, who didn't have their goalkeeper and I can't remember the other player. But they did. Chelsea was, you know, resting players that played a lot and still... Man, Chelsea just looks so dangerous and so good. Even when they debuted Saul, the guy that they signed from Atletico Madrid, who was a disaster in the first half, turnover after turnover.
They were hoping to rest Jorginho, I think.
And they had to pull Saul at halftime and put Jorginho back on, who had played 90 minutes, and I think 60-something minutes in the third
game.
Yeah.
You know, after Chelsea scored that opening goal, I thought Villa was the better team. I mean,
I agree.
You know,
but a lot of that was Saul turning the ball over repeatedly.
True, but hey, it is what it is, you know. And I think Villa was unfortunate not to have taken advantage of that.
Ollie Watkins is a really, really high-quality player, the guy that they got from Brentford. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to like about him, and he was very unlucky not to have scored today. Chelsea just looks super dangerous, and... I'm sure Saul will eventually figure it out. I think the thing to think about, if you are relatively new to watching the Premier League or just European soccer in general, and you think to yourself the differences between the different leagues and players coming and going and playing in different leagues, think about a Donny van de Beek or a Saul or Jadon Sancho, and they have slow starts because the Premier League is just a completely different beast than what they're used to doing. And that's why a player as good as an experienced as Saul shows up and he looks like a Sunday League player.
Yeah.
Because it's just that different.
And Villa, you know, even at the start of the second half, Villa still was looking to tie it. I mean, and until they farted a goal away at the other end.
Yeah, Mings with the bad back pass for sure. Lukaku, man, he just looks... Like every penny worth. They could have probably paid twice as much as
they
did.
You said, why are they getting Lukaku? Well, this is why they're getting Lukaku.
That's why I shouldn't have a radio show talking about soccer.
So
Chelsea ends up winning today a whole bunch of goals to nothing. Aston Villa, there you go. Now, this morning, it was Crystal Palace in the beautiful Selhurst Park, one of my favorite places I've ever been to. It's cramped. It's old. It's beat up.
I was happy today.
But it's a cool place. And Spurs... came into the building, is Wilfred Zaha the most consistently unhappy-looking player of soccer in the entire world?
Because he never smiles?
He always seems so unhappy, whether it's because he's been fouled or somebody didn't pass him the ball.
Or he has to play for Palace. Because he's been wanting out for a while. Yes. Nothing against Crystal Palace. I'm just saying he's been wanting out.
Yes. And this game was an absolute snoozer until Zaha and Tanganga got into it. Did you see the fight?
I did.
This
was
about...
wasn't a fight.
Oh.
A little pushing.
Okay, now wait a second.
Shoving.
I would suggest to you that is as close to a full-on fist fight as I've seen in a soccer game in a long time.
Are you surprised the red wasn't shown? That it didn't go to VAR?
I was relieved.
Because of the hand on the face? I was relieved, too. But.
I was relieved because it was because I really felt like Tanganga tried to quell it by putting his arms around Zaha, who was furious for fair reason.
Well, he got the, yeah.
Yeah. And then it kind of broke out from there. But once that happened, the game just kind of took on a whole new mood and attitude.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then that led to the red card, the second yellow, and then obviously then the game completely changes when a team has a man advantage. Palace was the better team, independent of that in the second half, I think. And Spurs, look, we talk about this being Kane's team. I think this is Son's team. He didn't play today, and I think you could tell he was missing.
Well, it's interesting to me how two teams have new coaches and can look so different than they have in their prior iterations, because... Like, for example, think about Nuno's team at Wolves, how that system just looked entertaining and worked really well for Wolves, but it seems a little off for Spurs. Mm. But think about how different Palace looks this season compared to the old man that was running it and kind of made it a stodgy team. They're a progressive. They carry the ball. They look adventurous. They look like they want to do something with it. I think Palace is entertaining to watch.
Yeah, and the substitute, man, I forget his name now, the kid that came from Scotland.
Edward.
Scores two goals after first touch, scores a goal.
27 seconds into his debut, scores a goal, scores again.
He comes in for Benteke, who is like...
Benteke can't score to save his life for... I mean, that has been an ongoing story for seasons. And then the kid walks in and scores 27 seconds in.
First touch.
It was pretty nuts.
Yep.
And then Leicester City, this was quietly the game that nobody, I don't know how many people were paying attention to. Leicester City hosting Manchester City. I understand there was something wrong with the streaming presentation on Peacock with it. I saw a lot of complaints about, so I don't even know if the full game was actually shown online. Manchester City in the very unstable all-white kit.
Yeah, I know.
Which was really weird.
Very weird.
And Leicester City... Now, Leicester loses to Manchester City. Bruno Silva goal makes it a 1-0 game. It didn't look like it was very exciting. But think about this. Leicester City, maybe this is the way they have to do this. They have to start slow instead of sitting in the top four all season and then blowing it at the end of the season.
Instead of going the other way around like they've always done.
They beat Wolves and beat Norwich, but they lost to West Ham United and Man City, and have a goal differential of -2. That's not exactly what we expected out of Leicester at this point.
That's a mid-table team. You lose to the good teams and beat the bad ones.
Yes, that is correct. All right, we'll stop and take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the other thing. By the way, look who won a game and scored a goal today. We'll talk about that team next here on the Kick Around. Just want to remind P1s that are trying to figure out what club they should support, whether it be in the Premier League or the Bundesliga or Serie A, that we can help. We do have the Supreme Wheel of Allegiance, which
will... Wheel of Allegiance.
The wheel, in its infinite power, will grant you a club to follow forever. And you can find that over on our website, thekickaround.com. Just go to the menu at the top where it says, Find a Club. And you'll see the wheels there. Now, don't spin it like 100 times until you get the club you want. You just spin it once, and you take whatever club for that league it gives you, for better or worse.
Yeah, what he said.
Says the guy that got Burnley. Welcome back to the Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on The Ticket. I'm Peter. He's Andy. We finally have some good news to report for our good P1s that are fans and followers and supporters of the Arsenal.
Do we, though?
Yes, of course we do. They won today. 1-0 over Norwich.
Not sure this...
At the Emirates.
I'm not sure this result or this game says anything about where they are.
Man, and it...
Fourth, or it kind of does, actually.
Fourth game of the season, and not only is it the team's first win, it's the first goal. Arsenal has scored one goal in four games, And by the way, did you see the goal?
What a glorious goal.
No.
What a strike. What an upper 90 strike. Bicycle kick.
Aubameyang from literally a foot out.
Yeah.
And for a second there, you probably thought he was offside because it was a scramble in the box. It was all legit and everything, but it wasn't a glorious finish. It was a Keystone Cops moment for Norwich. Yeah, Arsenal really struggled.
They struggled against Norwich at home.
Here's the thing, just real quick.
First half was a disaster.
Internally in my head, I think about this a lot, about Arteta and whether or not he's legitimately going to be good at this job. But think about this. You've got Ben White. You've got Kieran Tierney. You've got this new guy that they just got from Bologna, the Japanese guy, Tomiyasu. You've got Martin Odegaard, who was the next great Norwegian midfielder and probably still is. You've got Thomas Partey, Aubameyang, mm-hmm. Saka. Pepe.
Yeah.
There's a lot of quality in that roster.
Yeah, of course there is. But is it a well-composed roster? Is it a well-put-together roster? Or is it just a bunch of parts that you hope fit?
Well, I guess we're about to find out. Because I do wonder if somebody else gets this team, much like in the same way
Tuchel
did with Frank Lampard's roster.
That's what you mean, we're about to find out.
What do you mean?
Because there'll be a coaching change.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, no, okay. I'm not anticipating a coaching change.
You're just saying we're about to find out and see if it works.
And by the way, Aaron Ramsdale started over Leno today, too, in goal for Arsenal. So Arsenal 1, Norwich 2. Congratulations, Gunners fans. You are now on the board with a win and a goal. Congratulations.
Arsenal 1, Norwich 0, by the way, not Norwich 2.
Did I say 2?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Norwich 0 is what I was thinking of. I was looking at the next scores and which one I want to talk about next. Right. After an amazingly hot and exciting start of beating Newcastle 4-2 and then Leicester 4-1, West Ham United have cooled off. They have two draws. First, it was against Crystal Palace, and today at Southampton.
Mm-hmm.
That one stung. Now, it is also marred by the fact that Antonio was largely marked out of the game, got an early yellow, and then late in trying to press and retain the ball in Southampton's half of the field, kind of lunged at a guy and got a second yellow.
Yeah, very high cleat.
Yeah, it was legit. All of it was legit in terms of the call. But the problem this creates for West Ham is their next game is against Manchester United,
right?
And now they don't have their star striker for that game.
They're still undefeated after four matches.
They are. They're still in sixth. And Southampton, by the way, still without a win. They have three draws and a loss and 3 points and are sitting at 14th
Southampton
place.
Hit the post late, by the way. They almost
did the breakaway, and he should have finished that off, and it hit the post.
So a little bit lucky there for West Ham.
Brighton, wearing their away kits, which are, I think the best way to describe their away kits, are the color of a 1950s mid-century modern bathroom tile.
Light green?
Yeah, like toothpaste-y aqua green is what I think that is.
I was guessing. I got it right.
I told you at the beginning of the season,
Brighton
were going to start scoring goals, and they were going to start converting their opportunities. That goal that Trossard scored today to win the game, I'm telling you, this time last year, that comes off the post.
So the data showed last year they created so many more opportunities that they should have scored on, right? They should have scored more goals. That's what the data showed.
Yes.
That's what you're going by.
They were lagging in XG.
Exactly. That was the one stat. And so, man, you are right. Three wins in four games.
They are
sitting top four,
they are
right?
sitting in fourth place just behind tied with Man City on 9 points. Goal differential is the separator there. Brentford, by the way, Ivan Toney, I thought, was going to hit a worldie when he tried to hit it from just inside the half of the field, and he roped it.
Yeah.
He went high, but, man, that would have been a goal for the ages.
That would have opened up
him.
The scoring. It was 0-0 at that point.
And by the way, four games in, this is the Bees' first loss, and they sit in 10th with 5 points.
The Bees are legit, man.
The Bees are a lot of fun and very legit. And the first win of the season for Wolves took place today. They beat Watford at Watford 2-0, helped out by a 74th-minute own goal.
So that was a huge win for Wolves, by the way, because they hadn't been as bad as their 0-3 record had indicated, right?
No.
I mean, they're a good side.
I'm not too worried about Wolves. I think Wolves will
I'm not talking like Europe or anything, but their relegation shouldn't be something that they worry about.
I wouldn't think so, no. But they were certainly struggling early in the season, but they've got a new coach and some new pieces. You know, do you wince every time you watch Jimenez head the ball?
Man, I wince when he steps on the field.
It's very frightening. It is weird to watch. Now, we only have one game tomorrow, Andy. Just one game. It's
all
at 10:30, NBCSN at Ellen Road.
Yeah.
Leeds is hosting Liverpool.
I know. I worry about this game, and I'm not sandbagging all that. I mean, right? You would worry, too.
Well, so part of the reason why I think if Liverpool has a worry is because there was some roster issues tied to the matter that we mentioned earlier. But now has that all been cleared?
Yeah, the guys can play now. But
have you rescued the guy from Ghana or Guinea?
Kieta.
Wasn't he like locked in a hotel in Guinea?
Right. Yeah. I don't even know if we'll get to that story.
There was a political coup in that country when the
qualifier had to be suspended. They couldn't play it.
Right. And they were playing Morocco.
Right.
And those Moroccan players got lifted out of the country.
Yes.
But Kieta was stuck in the country?
Yeah, right. Yeah, they had to get him out because travel out of the country.
But what about all the other players that weren't allowed to play or did leave?
They weren't given permission. They stayed. And so they're clear to play. Now, whether they start or not remains to be seen because it depends how Klopp handled training and what he decides to do. Like, what do you do if you're a coach when you don't know, like, till 24 hours before the game if, like, three or four of your starters are going to be able to play or not?
Well, why wouldn't those guys be able to play if they didn't travel?
They will, but the trigger clause was being threatened by the federations for not releasing.
That's the trigger clause.
Right,
okay,
and they didn't agree to. They didn't agree.
So
to,
which players on Liverpool does that apply to?
All the South Americans, Fabinho, Alisson. Firmino.
Okay. And just those two?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I'm trying to go
Not
through the
Salah
roster.
Or anybody like the Asian countries or African countries?
Yeah. They weren't threatening.
Mm, okay.
They could have, but they didn't.
Well, this, I think, lines up to be an exciting game just because every Leeds game is amazing and fun to watch no matter what
Talking
the result
about
is.
The pressing in this game, who's going to press who the most? Well, Leeds will press the most, obviously. But,
yes, of course.
But Liverpool is a pressing team on their own.
I'd be interested to see if Daniel James walks into and starts with the team. You know, they bought him. Now, one thing to remind everybody.
I think he will play.
If you watched, and at our recommendation, Take Us Home, which is the fantastic 1.5-season series based on Bielsa's time at Leeds, if you'll go back and remember, there is an episode halfway through season one where they try to buy Daniel James from Swansea, and Daniel shows up at the campus. The whole thing's happening,
right? Yeah.
And then at the last second, the deal falls apart, and he goes back to Wales. So now he's actually with Leeds. Now United sold him for a good little profit, and I'll be interested because he is a prototypical hardworking. Run, press kind of guy, and I think he's a good addition to Leeds, so I'll be interested to see how that works out.
Keita's back, by the way.
Okay. Yeah. They rescued him.
They did.
They sent some sort of superhero.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I completely forgotten about that little side story.
You're welcome, buddy. No problem. All right, so Leeds-Liverpool, 10:30 tomorrow on NBCSN, and then we actually have our first Monday game, and it is the studio fight, the kick-around studio in control room fight. The control room derby. Everton hosting Burnley. Sam versus Josh.
So, boys, have you spoken about this?
We were talking about it a little bit in the last break. I'm worried about it for two reasons. One, I'm worried about Burnley coming in to Goodison and getting a win because they've been bad at home but decent on the road. And two, because the last two games we've talked about are big for the giant soccer bet that I made.
Way too much in-depth discussion about tactics when it should just be an all-out battle between who wins this and bragging rights. You're looking way too much into this.
I've got $4,000, Andy. I'm trying to win here, and this is a big match for that because if you win tomorrow and I lose tomorrow, we're in bad shape.
Josh.
Wait, why do you have – what is $4,000?
So to refresh those – Me and Bob Sturm currently have a bet, the big soccer bet, that if Liverpool finishes...
Is Bob even aware of this
yes,
bet?
Yes, we made it on the air. Thanks for listening to the show.
Are you sure he knows about
yes,
this?
Yes, he has my money.
Okay. You're not aware of this.
Yeah, no, I'm really...
I'm not concerned about this bet. I'm concerned about the bet between you two guys.
We don't
this...
have a bet because I've already put down... I've already made my big bet for the year. Like, I've already...
I can't afford a $4,000 bet.
He also can't. Neither of us
Wait
can.
A second. You bet $4,000 that Everton will be better than Liverpool this season?
The bet is... I'm really surprised you don't know about this because we did a whole segment on the Hard Line about it.
I didn't listen, sorry.
So Bob gave me 100-1 odds that Liverpool would finish 7th or worse in the Premier League this year. I bet $40 on it, so I'm in line that if Liverpool finishes 7th or worse, I will win $4,000 from Bob.
Oh, you didn't actually put $4,000
no,
down.
Because it's 100-1 odds. Like,
all right. Well, you promoting this incorrectly, sir. You made it sound like you actually handed somebody
$4,000. No, I don't have $4,000 to hand somebody. That's I have $40.
This is all taking attention away from Burnley and Josh, and I feel bad. This is Josh's
moment. Well,
Josh
moment, is probably going
to win. We're
on
just
Monday,
yakking
so...
away about Everton here.
I mean, I'm just assuming Burnley's going to lose. That's kind of my state of mind going into most Burnley.
Never mind.
Well,
I take it all back, Josh.
So
I take it all back.
Just
take it all back.
Wear the whole Burnley burden like a coat on a winter day, don't you,
That
Josh?
Being said, this new Cornette fellow may be playing on Monday. So
there we go. That's what I wanted to hear.
So
they
spent some money on a guy, and he may be playing.
They
so
didn't
get
Ross Barkley.
No, Barkley was on the bench today.
He's stuck in Chelsea purgatory.
Yeah.
The control room derby, some quality soccer talk right there.
Yeah, I expect some good banter back and forth between the two of you in the chat room tomorrow, fellas. On Monday.
Monday.
I mean, Monday, not tomorrow. Monday. All right. Well, so as of this moment, before the Leeds and Liverpool game tomorrow. Now, Liverpool, if they were to win, they could leap to the top of the table. But look who sits in number one spot. Numero uno, top of the Premier League once again, just like it should be always. Manchester United.
Oh, you're going to, okay.
Based on goals scored, ahead of Chelsea on 10 points. And then Man City, Brighton, and Spurs at 9. West Ham at 8. Liverpool with a game in hand along with Everton down at 7. Liverpool and Everton both have 7 points. That blows me away. Leicester was 6th and 9th. And Brentford, the Bees.
Bees top 10, man.
Yeah. Arsenal have at least pulled themselves out of the relegation zone with now their first 3 points, and they sit in 16th. All right, so that's the end of this.
Don't speak too soon, because if both Leeds and Burnley win, Arsenal's right back in relegation.
Man, why you got to make all the Arsenal fans so bummed out?
I'm just saying, if that happens, they're right back in the relegation zone.
I just want all the Arsenal fans to know that I chose to edit that part out of the presentation just to spare your feelings.
Them and their -8 goal difference. 1-4, 9 against.
All right. That's the day in the Premier League. Leeds and Liverpool tomorrow at 10:30 in the morning. Be ready for that. All right. When we come back, man, the last week or 10 days as a fan of the U.S. men's national team has been exhausting. And we'll talk all about that next here on The Kick Around. Welcome back to The Kick Around. Saturdays 2 to 4. Hi, I'm Peter. He's Andy. Now, we were off last weekend due to the holiday, which was terrible timing because while we were gone, the U.S. men's national team played not once, not twice, but thrice. So to try to like make good with the P1s, Andy and I...
And friends.
And well, I will get to that. Made sure that we had you covered. We recorded a post-game reaction podcast for all three games, posted them as quickly as possible that evening, and we had a litany of friends, Tyler Kern, Buzz Carrick, Jeff Carlisle from ESPN, all joined in at various different days to help out, talk about the coverage. But man, I'm telling you, I had this epiphany on the eve of the first game that this was my seventh go-around of U.S. men's national team World Cup qualifying.
This is your seventh qualifying cycle in proper soccer terms.
Yes, and it's always a giant pain in the ass.
But this is what it's all about, Peter.
It's unpleasant.
Your national team.
It's unpleasant.
Vying to make it to the World Cup. This is what it's all about.
Tummy all upset.
You know, this particular window... And we didn't have a show last week, so there's even more to cover because we didn't have the show last week. And the show would have fallen after the first two games prior to the third game. There's so many storylines.
No, we only would have played one game at that point because the second game would have been that night. Yeah.
You're right.
Yes.
So there are so many storylines from this window. I don't know where to start. Where do we start?
Going to El Salvador and getting a draw. Now,
I would even say starting before that with the team saying, like Tyler Adams, I think, Berhalter, points.
We're not going to get 9 points. We're going to win all three games.
We're going to go get 9 points. This is a different team.
Okay, I like that attitude.
Sure, okay.
But you and I both know that was never going to happen.
Because road games and CONCACAF are difficult.
Why, Andy? You are our CONCACAF expert. You've been to these stadiums.
My argument is always qualifying games in Europe. You go play in like Liechtenstein and Luxembourg. Those are your easy games. There's no easy game anywhere in the world, but you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Here, your easy games are going to earlier to the Caribbean, you know, and playing on bad fields and whatever and all kinds of issues related to fields and environment. And then later in the cycle, going to Central America and playing in pretty hostile environments. Intimidating, hostile environments.
I always laugh.
Warm, muggy as well.
The stadium weather-wise. In San Salvador, El Salvador, looks like a fight cage out of Mad Max and the Thunderdome. Because it literally has a security fence that's, 12 feet tall all the way around
and they've the given field. The nickname to the supporter section in the corner, Little Vietnam. That's where
apologies
the guys
to Vietnam, by the
that's
way.
Where the guys go take their corners and get pelted by.
Is that where the urine has been thrown
everything.
From? Batteries and urine.
By everything. So they go, this is game one. And this, you know, it was a difficult start to the octagonal, the eight group qualifying tournament.
Yeah, it was probably, there was.
The way it all was set up, right?
Right, because going to El Salvador, who was playing this late in the final round of qualifying for the first time in a while, they've got a young, exciting team, mm-hmm. they've got a good coach, mm-hmm. they've been playing well. You and I watched El Salvador kind of push Mexico around at the Cotton Bowl for a long period of time,
good,
not too long
team.
Ago.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That was the worst possible game for the U.S. to get
away
first.
In El Salvador, right.
So to get a draw that night, while I realized they didn't look good doing it, wasn't the worst of all situations.
And that was our reaction after that game. Hey, it's okay. We're okay. This is fine.
Although soccer Twitter was fire had started.
But we're one step ahead, Peter. We know what
we're more mature than this.
Exactly.
So then Saturday, down in Nashville, we find out that, we get U.S. Canada.
Was it Sunday? It was Sunday.
Sunday. Canada, United States.
Yeah.
Canada hasn't done anything in forever.
Right.
The Maple Leafs are terrible at soccer.
The last time they made a World Cup was 86. I have no hopes for this team. I'm heading into the game thinking I think we predicted the scores prior to the game. I think I said 3-0 or 2-0 U.S.
Right.
You came back with 1-1. You came back with a 1-1.
That's right. You said that U.S. was going to win and hold Canada scoreless. I predicted a 1-1 draw. And what was the final result?
It was 1-1, Peter.
Now, the other breaking news that we found out in the hours leading up to the game was that Giovanni Reyna was injured, had pulled his hamstring, and was out for the rest of the other two games. And Weston McKennie, the Kick Around's very own, Dallas-Fort Worth's beloved golden child of soccer.
We've created a segment on the Kick Around just because of him, the Serie A segment.
I know. And
in honor of him.
He shames us by acting bad again and getting kicked off the team and sent back to Italy. So not only does he not play against Canada, he doesn't get to play the following game against Honduras, and all of the drama surrounding what he did. Jeff Carlisle had reported that there was a shocking level of hypocrisy because he was one of the team guys on the team leadership committee that Berhalter had put together. And apparently Weston stood up in front of the team in the locker room and was telling everybody, we need to do better. We need to hold ourselves accountable.
Be accountable.
And then apparently decided he was going to break not just COVID protocols, but team protocols by reportedly sneaking out of the hotel to go hook up with his girlfriend one night and then having her sneak into the hotel
Yeah.
Another
which,
night.
Which is the worst of all the etiquettes. Sneaking somebody in to team concentration hotels. This team, any national team in the world, that's the worst of the worst.
I am just going to say this loudly and seriously on the radio. I am mad at Weston McKennie. I am seriously mad at Weston.
Yeah, he let us down a little bit.
Shaking my fist mad at Weston McKennie, because that is a letdown of everybody on the team. And then what really made me mad is that he kind of shut up shop and the media started going after Berhalter, who can't really say anything and doesn't really need to. Like, what does everybody need to know?
Mm-hmm.
Because part of the problem was there was this awful rumor that popped up online about something that people had, like a fake Twitter account that was made to look like the LA Times but wasn't, made a suggestion of who he had hooked up with, which was not true in any way, shape, or form. And it went like bonkers, crazy wildfire on day one. And Berhalter was doing his best, but Weston should have stood up, gotten in front of the media. He should have done more on social media and said, look, I screwed up. Please leave my teammates and my coach alone. It's not their fault. It's my fault. He didn't do that, and I'm really, really mad at him.
And also, what he posted was that he broke COVID protocol, which he did, but COVID protocol was, he happened to break COVID protocol by breaking a team rule. A team protocol.
Yeah, the way to say that is, if COVID didn't exist, what he did was so bad, he still would have been kicked off the team because his actions were so selfish, unprofessional, and S-y with an I-T-T-Y at the end of it.
So now this is the atmosphere. This is the atmosphere heading into the Canada game.
Right.
This is the one home game in these three game window. This is the one they have to get 3 points from.
So somehow they finagle a way of tying Canada.
Canada looked good.
Who looked great. And by the way, Buzz Carrick, who tried to tell you Canada's better than you think
they
are.
I believe him now.
That is a team that has been playing together for a while. Mm-hmm. Alphonso Davies is the best player in CONCACAF, and he's a danger against any team in the world. Mm-hmm. There's some really good quality in that side. So then they go with only 2 points in three games to Honduras.
Now, it's already bad at this point. Things are really bad at this point.
Oh, the entire house is engulfed in flames.
Yeah, and it's about to get worse. Because now we go to Honduras, and the first half in Honduras,
Maybe the worst of all the halves of soccer.
I don't know if I've seen the national team play a worse half of soccer.
Because Greg Berhalter has put them in this weird formation with players, four players that have never played in a qualifier, some of which are playing positions that aren't natural to them.
Yeah, out of position, not natural.
Tyler Adams is playing right wing back.
Yeah, our best midfielder is playing right wing back, right.
James Sands, who's never played in a qualifier, now is having to play double pivot with Kellen Acosta.
And I get it. Part of Berhalter's overthinking here is pieces are missing, he's got to adjust, but to me, that's when you simplify, not overcomplicate.
Yes.
You simplify when things are going wonky.
So what is the other thing that's happening? For the very first time, Ricardo Pepi from FC Dallas, a guy that had just in the weeks prior to this game announced that he was even going to play for the United States, starts up top, has a pretty vague to anonymous first half.
He was the lesser of the bad play. I mean, you know.
Because he didn't really have much to do.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, Berhalter makes some changes, makes some tactical changes. Honduras also makes some weird tactical changes that fed right into this.
Are you talking about halftime?
Yes.
No, I want to rewind because Honduras scores. We don't mention this.
I was trying to forget that part.
Honduras scores.
John Brooks looks terrible.
So now it's 1-0. Like, we headed into this game about as low a point as you could be.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's 1-0. You're heading into halftime, and it's 1-0. You're at halftime, and it's 1-0. That is 2 points in three games. Now you're thinking, are we not even going to qualify for the 22 World Cup?
We may not even qualify for the 26 World Cup that we're automatically qualified for. We're so
Berhalter, he's got to be fired. This is the worst of the worst of the worst. We're going to be in last place, right?
Yeah.
In CONCACAF.
The whole thing was terrible.
That was halftime.
And then they made the changes that I mentioned, and Ricardo Pepi just decides to put the entire nation of the United States on his back. He holds a ball up, plays it to Pulisic, and next thing we know, Robinson has scored, and we're tied 1-1. And then shortly thereafter, Yedlin, who's come in as a substitute, places a perfect ball into the box, an 18-year-old Ricardo Pepi, almost like a dream for anybody from North Texas, leaps in the air like a salmon and heads that ball in and makes it 2-1. And by the time it's all said and done, he's involved in two more goals as assists, and the United States has gone to Honduras and won that game 4-1, and suddenly now we're winning the effing World Cup.
Right. Total 180 of emotion for the U.S. national team fan base.
It was
in 45 minutes. I mean, it's incredible,
but
right?
But for it to be not just the turnaround and the fight back and winning that game, and suddenly now we're in third place with 5 points and everything feels okay, it was Ricardo Pepi.
Right. Our boy.
Our boy. Our dad. All of the shame that Weston brought on us with his actions were all covered up by
Weston
the beauty
who?
Of Ricardo Pepi. Who scored, and by the way, he's a great story. What a fan. And now everybody's got him locked in as the nine for this team, which is like, okay, everybody, just hold on. So,
but now second place, five points, an easier window coming up now in October.
Yeah.
Compared to this one, things are looking up.
It's
incredible how everything changed in 45 minutes. And you know what? We can talk about the tactical changes and what Berhalter did. The intensity and the spirit of the team coming out of halftime, that was missing.
Yeah.
And by that was missing this window until the 46th minute of the third game.
And just everybody, no matter where your stance is on this, just remember, when it came down to it, it wasn't your European-based players that won this game. It was your MLS players.
Right.
An 18-year-old kid from the MLS MLS Academy team.
Your Barcelona guy was in there. Your Juventus guy was in there.
Your Chelsea guy. Well, he kind of was.
Anyway.
Yeah. I'm just making a point. So there you go. U.S. Ends up with 5 points, sitting in third place, tied with Panama, and they'll go from there. Go, go, USA. When we come back, the good Daniel Robinson checks in, and we'll talk a little Weston McKennie and Juve next on the Kick Around. Welcome back to the Kick Around. I'm Peter. He's Andy. We are the soccer show of record here on the Ticket. Deep into our eighth season, believe it or not. All right, so we just spent some time talking about the men's national team and the ridiculously stupid drama tied around one Weston McKennie, who I'm furious at, and I've yet to receive an apology personally from him.
Peter's mad.
I'm very mad, and I'm sure that means something to him. Right now, to talk about that and all things Serie A on the Ticket Buyers Barricade Hotline is our good friend Daniel Robertson. Hello, Daniel. Welcome to the Kick Around once again.
Gentlemen, how are you today?
Well, Daniel, actually, I'm doing pretty well because Ronaldo scored twice for my Manchester United, so thank you for asking.
Daniel, I'm doing even better because my Fiorentina is winning right
now. They are clinging on. I have the game on. They have their fingers clutching on to the ledge in Bergamo. 2.5 minutes left to play. Still up 2-1.
Is anybody going to score a non-penalty kick goal in this game? That's the big question.
does it matter?
No, true. It doesn't. That would actually be a pretty good result for Fiorentina to win at Atalanta, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be huge. I mean, 6 points from the first three games, and the Atalanta, I don't know that they lost at home last year at all, so this would be a huge win.
All right, now, Daniel, we do want to talk a little bit about Weston McKennie because of your experience with Juventus and kind of understanding of how that whole thing operates. You know, he does get a start today in their loss against Napoli. They lost today. But I think, and maybe you can clarify this, he didn't play very well, was removed from the game about 65 minutes in. What is the long-standing status of Weston at Juve, do you think?
Yeah, and look, he started today because he was one of about 13 warm bodies available. You know, they had such a heavily South American team. I think there were 7 starters missing, all kind of around midfield. The only player he had to beat out was Aaron Ramsey to start. So, you know, that's not exactly the toughest thing to do in the world. It's an interesting time for Weston. I mean, you guys have talked about it, but look, this isn't the first time he has timed a party very poorly. He was suspended at Juventus for the exact same thing. I'm not sure what the restrictions are now, but back in April, there was a curfew at 10 o'clock a.m. or p.m. This was pre-vaccine, and there was a curfew in the whole country at 10 p.m., and he had a party that the Police were called to at 11:30 p.m. He got suspended, and it was right after a big home loss that left him 10 points down. So he's not timing these things very well.
Yeah, he seems to have a problem. You know, Buzz, our friend Buzz Carrick, had said that he had heard around some Dallas circles that his off-the-field decision-making historically is not noted as being high or good or whatever the word is. I don't know what it is, but it obviously is a problem. But, you know, he was already on kind of the shop window at the beginning of the season and then decided to keep him. And then they've been, like, playing him in different positions. I heard they played him as a 10 a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and you got to remember, I think this is a Juventus team without an identity right now. They don't know what they are yet. They filled so many stopgaps from the team that won 7 league championships in a row. A bunch of the players retired or moved on. You buy Ronaldo and it papers over the cracks, but now Ronaldo's gone, and so there's really nothing left to paper over those cracks. And I don't think Allegri really knows his team's identity yet. He wasn't the manager when Weston joined the club, obviously, and I think Weston's versatility made him worth more than they probably could have gotten for him. But I wouldn't say that he will probably be long for Juventus, whether it's 6 months or 12 months.
All right. Now, and to be fair to Weston, because you were a young 20-something who packed up all your stuff and moved to Turin, Italy to work for Juventus, you maybe shed a little bit of light about the realities of being a young 20-something single guy living in Turin, Italy, playing for the big club in town.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a glamour to playing for Juventus. Not that Turin is the most glamorous city. A lot of the players will go over to Milan, which is about an hour east, to go party when they want to. But look, and I've known Weston. You know, I was working at FC Dallas when he was the captain of the U18s, and, you know, seeing him every day out there. And granted, he left right before the playoffs to go sign in Germany. But I've known him for a long time, and I don't think he's like a bad person or a problem child or anything like these things. But you just got to read the room, right? I don't think that it's not that there's so many pitfalls in Turin, Italy. I think it's just a matter of you got to read the room and you know, be smarter.
Well, and you're a leader, and you have to understand the situation, and you can't figure out, well, because I'm Weston McKennie, I can do things other people can't do, and I won't get caught doing it, because you will get caught. I mean, that's really the lesson.
Especially at Juventus, where, okay, look, on the national team, he's one of the top 3 or 4 players, but on Juventus, he's not even one of the top 3 in the midfield. So if he becomes an issue at all, there are players that have been known to stick around at Juventus who maybe aren't up to the task because, look, they're glue guys. They're guys in the locker room that everyone likes. But if you're causing problems and you're not even one of the top 3 players, they're not going to keep you around.
Hey, so switching gears a little bit, our other favorite team in Serie A is Venezia because of the America. Did I say that right? Venezia?
Venezia, sure.
Venezia,
sure.
Okay. Good news is they won. Bad news is Tessman, again, did not see minutes.
Tanner Tessman, formerly of FC Dallas. Yes.
So, you know, started game one, but now 2 games in a row that he's ridden the bench. Do you know reasons? I mean, is he not showing well in training?
Yeah, the reports haven't been amazing on him so far. I mean, look, and I think, you know, Busio has started the last 2 games for them. And I think anyone who watches MLS, and this is not a slight at Tanner Tessman, but I think anyone who watches MLS would say Gianluca Busio is at a higher level than Tessman. And he plays a position more of a 2-way midfielder, whereas Tessman plays in a role that if you make a single mistake, you're going to cost your team a goal. And I think that, yeah, he's probably just still figuring it out. I mean, look, I like the guy. He wasn't starting at FC Dallas.
Right.
So yeah, good point.
Why would he suddenly go into a Serie A team and start, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah, I feel like Busio's style is very attuned for Serie A. And Tanner's is not. So Tanner, not only was he not starting regularly for Dallas, he just has a longer path to kind of figure out how to play that game over there. It's very different. I'm not worried about my bigger worry about Tanner and any decision an American makes to go play in some of these teams where you feel like you just took the first opportunity. Is it really the best place for you? And this is one of the ones where I worry that maybe Tanner should have thought about other opportunities. But I guess
should have thought about turning down an offer to go to Venice?
Yeah, I know. I get it, but, you know, Dan, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Well, look, I mean, I think also it takes two to tango, and I think FC Dallas, the price paid, I think they were probably more than happy to move him along, and I'm sure he got a nice contract, so let's not feel too bad for him as the, you know, Dallas natives, don't we all wish we were, what, 20 years old and living in Venice?
Yeah, I guess it's a little different than taking a deal to go to Stoke, I suppose, like Brett Shea did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good
all right,
point.
And then tomorrow, Roma plays Brian Reynolds. Is he getting anywhere with Jose Mourinho? Is he getting any time, any looks, any favorable comments, pats on the back or anything?
Yeah, he has gotten a few minutes. I wouldn't expect him to play tomorrow, but they have that Europa Conference League coming up on Thursday, and I would expect him to start in that game. I think that he is going to get some minutes. I think that a game like that is perfect for getting him out there and seeing what he's got in a lower pressure situation. I mean, look, it's not like they're too worried about their performance in this kind of hokey third, you know, tier tournament. So I would look for him to play on Thursday. I would not expect him to play tomorrow. But again, this is a player who, you know, he's for the future, and Mourinho has said that.
All right, and then the other big game tomorrow is Milan and Lazio, correct?
Yes, that is the one. Everyone should be excited about Milan versus Lazio, two undefeated teams who have been scoring goals for fun, 13 goals combined in their first two games. That's an 11 a.m. kickoff on Paramount Plus. Definitely want to check that one out. And, you know, as we mentioned, Paramount Plus, you're going to buy it for Champions League anyway. So go ahead and get signed up for that one. And that is going to be, you know, really a can't-miss match tomorrow, probably 3, 4, 5 goals expected in that one.
All right. The great Daniel Robertson. Thank you, sir. I hope you get your T-shirt in the mail, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm on the lookout.
All right. Very good. We'll talk to you soon, maybe in a couple of weeks or so. Daniel Robertson, go check him out. We'll the link to his Twitter account is on our website under the staff stuff. All right. When we come back, we'll shift gears and check out the Bundesliga and the UEFA qualifying results. And we'll do that with our friend Tyler Kern next here on the Kick Around. We have made it to the final segment of today's Kick-Ass Kick-Around. Now, I hate to tell everybody this, but it has come to my attention that Mustang football will get in our way next week. Am I right about this, Samuel?
Yes, 2:30 kick next week for SMU.
That's not good. Maybe we'll have to do a podcast.
I've already done three this week, Peter.
You don't want to do any more? Are you done? Are you burned out on podcasting, Andy? This is it for today. Now, Andy, can you briefly try to explain forever before we get to Tyler?
Yeah.
Can you briefly explain all of the shenanigans and brouhaha that took place in Brazil several days
ago?
Yeah,
so it has to do with all these players that got released or didn't get released by the Premier League. Four Argentinians went on their own. They left the clubs anyway, even though they didn't have permission, as we talked about earlier. And so when they got to Brazil, Brazil has a quarantine rule that if you are also in a red zone country, you have to quarantine unless you're Brazilian. And England is a red zone country in Brazil, as a reciprocal measure, because Brazil is a red zone country in England. That's all it is. So when the Argentinians get to Brazil, first they lie, you know, at customs or whatever, immigration. They say they haven't been to England. You know, they ask, have you been to a red zone country, England being one of them? And they said no. So they lie. But then the Brazilian health authorities, they go to the hotel and they say, look, these four guys, we're not going to deport them, but they can't
play in the game.
They can't play in the game.
But they're always like
they
two steps behind everybody,
yeah, it's
right?
Like Keystone Cops a little bit, or like Inspector Clouseau a little bit, right?
But to just save time, eventually what ends up happening is the game kicks off and they run on the field and stop the game.
So they got to the game and they said, don't play them. And they started them anyway. And so 4 minutes, they said, if you play them, we'll come on the field and stop the game. And they did.
It was the most, I've never seen anything
like that. So the game's suspended. It's a big brouhaha. FIFA's going to look and see what happens there. The short story is that in South America, Brazil is still rolling. 8 wins in 8 games. That 9th game is not played yet. Argentina is also rolling. They're going to qualify. Messi
breaks a record.
Yeah, he scores a hat trick against Bolivia in the game to celebrate the Copa America championship in front of their home crowds, and they have a ceremony. He breaks the record, Pele's record of most international goals scored by South America.
Pele's in a hospital recovering from tumor surgery.
Thanks, Messi. Thanks a lot. But really no surprises in South America. Argentina and Brazil are on their way. Uruguay's in third. Everything's kind of fallen in line as expected. Brazil and Argentina, the only two away teams to win a game in this window in South America. All the home teams either tied or won. So South America's like that. And you know what? UEFA is the same. And it's weird because when we have all these compressed windows, international windows for World Cup qualifying, you think there'd be some wonky stuff going on. But it's all the teams that are expected to be in first are in first.
Got depth.
Yeah, because they have depth. Portugal, Spain, Italy, France, Belgium, Denmark, the Netherlands, Croatia, England, and Germany. Those are your group leaders. Those are all the favorites to win their groups.
Yeah.
There's no major surprises. Netherlands is tied with Norway. They're just up. Their advantage is goal difference because they drew in Oslo. Haaland scored a goal. So he's starting to do things for Norway.
You mean Haaland scored against Holland?
Yes, right.
Weird.
And have you seen what Denmark is doing? Six games, six wins, 22 goals for, zero against.
Whoa.
Come on, that's Denmark.
That
You're like, they're something. This team is legit. And Italy is rolling. They tied Switzerland on the road. They thumped Lithuania. And if I had to pick a favorite for Qatar now, I'd say Italy.
Really?
You sound so disinterested in this stuff.
No,
this
I am interested.
World Cup qualifying.
It's so early in the process. And the only thing that I'm fascinated about it at this point is how all of the club teams.
It's not early. They're halfway through UEFA is.
Yeah, but there's still a bunch of windows left. And now the league seasons have begun. Now these games have started to impact league games.
What I'm saying is UEFA is going to qualify the same old teams. All there's right. a few teams that are going to make waves that we didn't expect.
We're not going to get
Denmark.
Moldova?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
All right.
No Luxembourg.
Joining us via the miracle of the internet to talk other things about European soccer is our good friend Tyler Kern. Hello, Tyler.
Hello, boys. Guten Tag.
You're into the UEFA qualifiers, right, Tyler? Come on.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah,
I'm
thank
into
you.
It, too. But I think the fascinating storyline is that after one window, how much, like The Athletic the other day wrote an article going team by team in the Premier League of every team's injuries coming out of the international window, and it was not even a medium-length list. The list is long, and as we get into the next window, which happens in... I mean, look, think of Chelsea, for example. Pulisic's hurt. They have another window with the United States in less than a month.
Mm-hmm.
They have to let Christian go.
Yeah.
But think about that impact ongoing as we get deeper and deeper into seasons.
And on his standing with the club as well. He's gone. He loses time. Yep.
And I Tyler, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I do believe that these qualifying windows of not one, not two, but three games is going to become a bigger and bigger issue across Premier League, Bundesliga, Serie A, and La Liga, and even MLS to that degree as we continue to go on. I think it's a huge story that is yet to fully flesh itself out. Right, Tyler?
Nope. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think it's going to take a massive toll on these teams. And you got to think that some of these guys that are playing with these national teams haven't really had a break.
Like
maybe, what, 2 weeks or so?
And it's going to be
in
like
the
this.
Last,
it's
going to in continue. In the last, like, 2 years.
It's going
right?
to continue until November of 22.
Summer.
Yeah, right, Tyler. Yep. It's going to be like this until November 22. It's going to be a fact of life.
Man,
let's get used to it.
You're just dismissing this as a minor issue.
No, I'm just saying it matters what these national teams are doing for World Cup qualifying. You guys are all like, this is going to have an impact on my Premier League. It was like, yeah, okay, but it's still World Cup qualifying.
But they're paying their checks. I mean, I do think it's interesting that we somehow as fans just dismiss the fact that there's some guy or people that are paying these guys millions and millions and millions of dollars, euros, or pounds. And they have no control over the fact that they lose these people for an extended period of time where they're likely to get broken and not be able to play for the business that they pay them to play for.
Because they have to go play for their country. Tyler, how's it the Bundesliga?
The Bundesliga, as always, is pretty off its rockers. And that's why I love it so much, guys.
I saw a stat today, speaking of Haaland scoring against Haaland, that I think I retweeted it earlier today, that Erling Haaland has now scored, 61 goals in 67 Bundesliga appearances? Is that the stat?
God, that can't be right.
It's wild. Like when he's healthy, he is smashing in goals. It's pretty remarkable.
Game stats.
Yeah. Yeah. The guy, I mean, he scored twice again today to help Dortmund. Once again, I think I said 2 weeks ago that Dortmund should be everyone's just must-watch Bundesliga team because they're wild. They won today 4-3 despite falling behind three different times. They were behind 1-0, 2-1, 3-2, and then got two goals at the end and came back and won that 1-4-3. But Haaland had two more goals today. He is just an absolute machine when it comes to scoring goals.
He is. I do wonder where he's going to end up. I think that is another story that is really fun to watch. Where he's going to end up going from Dortmund, whether it's the Premier League or Real Madrid or whatever it is, I don't know. But he is such a rocket ship of potential.
Man, I think Manchester City kept some of their powder dry this summer.
You think?
With the knowledge that he's going to be $75 million next summer. That's what his release clause drops to. And his dad played for Manchester City. And his dad actually played with Giovanni Reyna's dad at Manchester City. Yes. So,
$75 million.
Or Claudio Reyna. So, yeah, like but I think... Yeah, it's going to be an absolute bargain next summer. And so it's going to be a free-for-all because I think just about all of the major clubs outside of maybe Barcelona can pay for that. It's going to be a matter of where he wants to go, and that's kind of why I think it ends up being Manchester City. It seems like he slots right in there, right?
Yeah, I mean, he does. There's a lot about his game that fits Pep very, very well. That would be interesting.
You know, there was talk he might have gone to United, but with Ronaldo at United, I think that's out now.
Yeah, there's also the history of Roy Keane and United and his father and all that. Yeah. That probably I don't know if that really clouds. But then there's the Solskjaer relationship,
yeah, right?
Yeah. So,
but anyway, that's not going to happen. No.
And then the other game that I know you're interested in talking about is the Leipzig Bayern game.
Yeah, Bayern Munich doing Bayern Munich things and beating Leipzig 4-1 and poor Jesse Marsh just one
My
win
Leipzig.
And three losses in his first.
Is
yeah,
he
your hot RB
seat?
Leipzig
hot seat.
I don't think so. You look at the number of changes that have happened to that team over the last year, right? Like, not only is Jesse Marsh a new coach, but he lost their two starting center backs from last season, as well as, at the very end of the transfer window, Marcel Sabitzer went to Bayern Munich to join Julian Nagelsmann there. And so it's a pretty typical Bayern thing to do, and you hate to see it, but when one team is so dominant and has all of this money, what they do is they end up just kind of cannibalizing the rest of the league, and that's what they did to Dortmund the last time Dortmund actually beat them and won the league under Jurgen Klopp. They went out and just bought Lewandowski and Mario Götze from that team, and then Dortmund was never the same after that, and you know Lewandowski's been the best goal scorer in the entire world since then. And then you look at what they did to Leipzig last year. They spent $25 million because that was the coach's release clause on RB Leipzig. Bayern go and just pay that $25 million and get Julian Nagelsmann as their coach, buy their best center back, and now get their most versatile, probably talented midfielder as well in Marcel Sabitzer. So That's what Bayern does, is if you start to get close to them and kind of threaten them, they say, okay, we're going to pick off everyone from your team that might be of value to you, and it's up to you to rebuild now. And so that's kind of the position Jesse Marsh is in.
Yeah, that's the side thing about the Bundesliga that it makes it unattractive to me, is that part of it, that one team is just money-whipping everybody else, which does lead me to this question. Then what is going to keep Bayern from spending the 75 million German dollars to get Haaland?
That's a great question. I think that for Haaland, it's always been really... his dad is extremely involved in everything that he does and that sort of thing. So it's going to be Haaland's decision what team he ends up playing for. And I think on some level, Haaland eventually wants to end up being one of the most marketed, famous players in the world. And I don't know necessarily that's coming from him, but I think the ultimate goal is for him to end up at a club where he is a world superstar and playing in Champions League and that sort of thing. And while Bayern... you know, has that capability, it's almost like a PSG situation where when it feels like a given that you're going to win the league year in, year out, it doesn't feel like, oh yes, this is the best way to kind of maximize my brand and that sort of thing. So I see him going to, you know, a bigger media market, whether that's Real Madrid or, you know, somewhere in the Premier League, which I think it's Manchester City.
All right. Is there a feel-good story of a club doing exceeding expectations we need to follow so far yet in the Bundesliga?
Well, look, for all of Bayern's dominance and being outstanding, Wolfsburg is actually still on top of the league and one of the only perfect teams in all of European soccer. Through four games, they're 4-0-0 with six goals scored and one goal against. So it's all on the back of the Wolfsburg defense. So they're still on top of the Bundesliga. So, you know, that's a feel-good story. You don't expect that to last. But Mark Van Bommel is their new head coach and has them playing some really good defense so far.
Did Brooks play today?
He did not, as far as I know. I need to go back and double check. They played Greuther Fürth, who is a really bad team that got promoted over the last year. And yeah, Brooks did not play today.
You know who else is undefeated?
John Brooks came on as a sub. Who else is undefeated?
Union Berlin.
Union Berlin.
They're also undefeated.
My boys over there. See, I told you guys. I told you guys, and you scoffed at me. But Union still has not lost. No. I mean, just one win, three draws, but no defeats. We take it.
Mm-hmm.
We take it. We ride with Union.
How are your Union Berlin underoos fitting these days?
quite well. A little bit tighter, but quite well.
Okay.
All right. Very good. Tyler Kern, we love you, man. Do you like your shirt, dude?
Love my shirt. Wearing it right now, actually. It is beautiful. Customized kick around shirt. I love it. Excellent. I love it.
Well, thank you, Tyler, for your insight and expertise into all things Bundesliga. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Yes, sir. I will be ready.
Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Bundesliga, for all your good content. Andy, we're not going to be on next week. We've got to figure out when we're going to tell, A, the story of the trip to Austin. B, we need to find a pair of those awful U.S. men's national team socks.
Yes, because why, Peter?
Because I made a bet that if they won in Honduras, I would wear a pair of those socks with khaki shorts and a white t-shirt around. I'd mall walk around North Park with
those. The thing is, you say that...
But nobody can find them.
And we're supposed to go and take pictures and videotape
I was just going to do it.
Because if we do that, it draws attention. Everybody's like, "Oh, it's a bit." You have to do it with us without us filming it.
Yeah. Or from a distance.
Kickaround.com.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm up for paying off bets and bits.
Right. Okay.
We got the 3 points in Honduras. It worked.
Yes.
But we do need to tell the story of the trip.
Yes.
In the curious case of the flat tires along I-35.
Don't give it away.
Sorry. Okay. Thank you, Ryan, for doing awesome tickers. Thank you, Sam, for producing real hard. And thank you, Josh, for running the board like the master that you are. Thank you, P1s, for listening. We love and adore you. Go on out there, get stuck in, and win your 50s.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Plaza, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth, KTCK FM Flower Mound.